My name's Bryce Wasserman, and this is Pro Lacrosse Talk.
Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson.
Courier, ball game.
Kylie Omiller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Byrne.
Kayla Trainer fires to score.
You're kidding me. By Dylan Warren.
Gets topside. Rambo scores.
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Adam Moore and Hutton Jackson.
What is going on, lacrosse fans? Welcome to another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk. We appreciate everyone that tuned in to our episode with Tom Schreiber last Friday night. And his big announcement about him joining the Epic lacrosse team, really excited for him and excited to hopefully make some more content with him going forward. Really sorry, Tom, about the tough 5-5 questions. We didn't think they were that difficult to throw at you, but we certainly had fun having you on the podcast. But today we're going to talk about the waiver wire ads that happened this past week, as well as those that didn't happen and the biggest snubs that we think could maybe land on a roster right before training camp. We're also going to discuss the open defensive coordinator position with the Atlas and the big Brent Adams trade to the Atlas as well. Let's start off with that, Adam. Brent Adams to the Atlas, only for a fourth-round pick in next year's draft. What was your reaction when you heard he was being traded to the Atlas from the Cannons?
Yeah, Cannons fans, you thought you got your boy back, and just like that, he's gone that quickly. I laughed when I saw the PLL announcement, the graphic for the trade, because it said Brent Adams trading from the Cannons to the Atlas, and it was a picture of him in the Redwoods jersey because he never even got a chance to don the new Cannons look. But yeah, I mean, he was an all-star in 2019, top 50 guy this year in 2020, so it's really surprising that they were only able to get a fourth round pick for a guy that talented.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised that it was only a fourth round pick because the trade got made. I'm more surprised the trade got made, because I think what people need to realize is there's so little leverage with making these trades. You know, there's only eight teams. It's not like in the NFL where, you know, somebody gives you an offer that you don't want. You can go to 31 other teams or 30 other teams and, you know, ask them. Like this, it's like Redwoods aren't going to get them back because they left them unprotected, which, you know, was probably, that was the biggest shock to me up until this point. Now I'm shocked that not only was he unprotected, but he got traded away. And then the Redwoods you can rule out. Obviously, you got the Cannons, have him. And it seemed like the only interest there was really the Atlas. So the Atlas are going to be able to set the terms. If they're only offering a fourth round pick, you know, and a deal's going to get done, that's what the deal's going to get done for. So yeah, is it a steal for the Atlas? And is Brent Adams completely undervalued in this trade? Absolutely. But if a trade's getting done, it's really not that odd. I think, you know, until you start to see contract details, length of these contracts, you're going to see a lot more of these lopsided trades. I mean, we kind of talked about the Connor Fields trade. You know, no disrespect to Ian McKay, I think the fit for both teams is way better, but you know, you could have probably potentially got some more assets out of Connor Fields if you're doing it based on a pure asset transfer. But you know, that deal's not going to get done because no one's going to really make that trade. You know, it was probably, again, only the Archers really on the Connor Fields market. Maybe there's a few other teams having discussions, but that's the biggest thing takeaway, is that these trade values, you know, and how the teams value players aren't going to really, you know, match their skill set. It's just what you're willing to give up. Now, if I'm Coach Quirk and Ben Ruber comes to me and says, I'll trade you a future fourth round pick for Brent Adams, I tell him to kick rocks. You know, like that's what I would do. I would keep Brent Adams. I don't understand why you trade him if that's all you can get from him. But if Coach Quirk, you know, had some other guys in mind to bring on his roster, he obviously made a lot of waiver wire moves, which we'll get to. And he was interested in moving Adams. Like that was really all he could move Adams for. So that's, I guess, my biggest takeaway from this trade. Was it a steal for the Atlas? Absolutely. But if a trade was going to get done, it was going to get done for, you know, a low return, I guess, for the Cannons.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just can't wait for the day that I can close my tab for my NBA trade machine and bring up my PLL trade machine and mock trades and do all the crazy stuff that NBA Twitter does. Really looking forward to knowing contracts, knowing all of that kind of stuff to be able to analyze these trades a little bit deeper.
Yeah, and right now, you know, you just can't, like, do it. And you'll see trades in other big sports that are kind of similar to this, where it's like, you know, assets are traded and they don't match, you know, the value. But then you look at the contract details and you can kind of justify it. This, you can't really do that because you're not trading contracts. Your contract's with the league. And again, back to like, there's only eight teams. So if deals are going to be made, I'm shocked as many deals have been made as they have been. And honestly, if you look at them, they have all been with pretty big name players. And that's because if you're not a big name player, you're not getting traded because there's probably a comparable player on someone else's roster. And that's, you know, again, this isn't a disservice to Brent Adams. He's, you know, a top player in this league, but you know, not many teams probably needed Brent Adams' services despite how good he is. And that's what it comes down to with a lot of these PLL teams. They're so stacked that it doesn't make sense to make a move. That's why you won't see Dylan Ward traded, because Dylan Ward is going to demand a high return for coach Andy Towers. And he's not going to get that return for Dylan Ward. So why move him? You know, why not just keep him on your roster? And on the flip side, no other team's going to want to trade for Dylan Ward because, you know, it's not going to be that huge of an upgrade. I think Dylan Ward's an upgrade on almost any team, but is it going to be that big of an upgrade? I'll pose this. If you're the Atlas, you have Jack and Cannon on your roster. Would you rather have Dylan Ward or Jack and Cannon as your goaltender?
Yeah, I'd rather have Dylan Ward.
You'd rather have Dylan Ward. Yeah, I'd agree with that. But if you're Ben Rubior, why on earth would you trade a top goaltender like Jack and Cannon for Dylan Ward? And I'm not saying this is, you know, just an example. Like, you could do this for a lot of different teams. You know, Redwoods, I think Dylan Ward's slightly better than Tim Trautner. But why would you trade Tim Trautner? He's a great goaltender. You know, it's there. Every team has a great goaltender. So why trade for, you know, a 1 to 5% better goaltender? You know, that might make a difference in the long run, but it's just not, doesn't make sense at this time to give up assets to get that, you know, yeah, you're pretty content with who you have.
Yeah. And we talked about too off pod about kind of, if you did decide to make that trade for those assets, you're going to have to make room on your roster in other areas, right? If you're trading what a first, a second, and a player for Dylan Ward, whatever the case may be, is you have to fill two positions that you already think you're stacked at, right? Most of these coaches are really excited about kind of where their roster is right now. And, you know, another really good point that Tom brought up in our last pod is a lot of these teams are built and really structured around those core guys that came in year one, right? And those really strong connections. And you've obviously seen guys change teams over the last 2 years, but a good bulk of those guys that came in year one are still with those teams. And that connection and that camaraderie is something that we didn't just hear from Tom on Friday, but we've heard a lot over the last 2 years.
Yeah, no, these coaches, they're building teams. They're not, you know, building an all-star team. They're building an actual team that can compete, and there's chemistry there. I mean, just the Chaos are a prime example. They didn't make any waiver wire ads. They didn't really need to. They have a bigger roster, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But, you know, they have a bunch of Buffalo Bandits guys on their team, trained for Ian McKay. Like, brilliant move, you know? He works well with Dane Smith, Josh Byrne. You know, a lot of the Canadian guys have played together before. You saw a Nick Wishuda getting added to the Archers. Again, we're going to get into that a little bit. But, you know, history with Coach Cav and Vermont there, you're seeing a lot of, you know, known, and that's why maybe there has been some snubs. You know, there's definitely some players that I think, you know, I don't care if they've never played with any of the guys on your team, definitely deserve a shot. But that's why you're seeing a lot of, you know, again, coaches value team chemistry. And again, you're building a team. You're not building an all-star team. Like, you know, I think Brent Adams, there was a place for Brent Adams on this Cannons team. But if you're going to move them, you know, if at least the Cannons got a pick in return, like they got value from that. They got Brent Adams pretty much for free via the expansion draft. You know, again, that's, you know, I think if you kept Brent on your team, you're going to get another all-star player on your team. So that's why, again, I don't make the move. I say no, if anyone comes to me and it's an offer that isn't, you know, up to what I want for Brent Adams, but clearly it was enough for Coach Cork to make the move. And that's kind of where I stand on it. I think it was a steal. The Atlas got a steal in Brent Adams. I think he's probably motivated more than ever because he was left unprotected by the Redwoods and now traded for a future fourth rounder, which is practically nothing. So if I'm Brent, I'm coming back with a vengeance. But the fact that a deal got done, the return doesn't surprise me too much. I guess that's where it comes down to. But we have some other Atlas stuff to discuss, and that is the opening at defensive coordinator position. Now, our friend Rick Beardsley resigned from the Atlas. He talked about it a little bit on Takeaways podcast. We won't get really into the details around that, but there's just a differing in opinion and direction that they wanted to take the team. Obviously, Ben Rebor is making a lot of moves this offseason. He's taking it in a completely different direction. And that vision was obviously not quite shared with Rick. Rick also wants to take it in a different direction, but they just weren't meshing. So that's why Rick decided to step down. I think the opening lends itself well to see maybe Ken Clawson come in. If I had to put money on that, I think that's going to be the guy that Ben Rubier hires. We haven't heard the hire since recording this podcast, but it probably looks like that's what it's going to be. Ken Clawson stepping in, who did a pretty good job with the Outlaws last year and obviously has history playing with Coach Rubier at UVA. So it sounds like that's going to be it. But, talk to Rick. Rick wants to be back in this league. I think he's going to wait for his opportunity. But there is an opening at the Atlas defensive coordinator position, and we both feel like it's probably going to be Ken Clawson. It could be somebody else, but that's where it's looking right now from what we've been seeing and hearing. And it just makes a lot of sense, but what are your thoughts too on the direction of this Atlas as a whole, and kind of what they did in the entry draft? We talked about it a little bit, but are you liking the direction Ben Rubio is taking it, or are you still kind of, waiting to see?
Yeah, I kind of want to see what they do with how many picks they have in this upcoming college draft, right? The book isn't finished yet, right? Coach Rubier hasn't put pen to paper on that last page yet, and he's still building this squad, and I can see them making a number of waiver claims and kind of additions as we go on through training camp and whatnot. So he's building assets. He's building this roster and kind of his image. People were surprised about where some of the guys he drafted went in that entry draft. But I'll wait to see until we see this new look Atlas hit the field before making anything out of these moves.
Yeah, and we mentioned Ken Clawson, obviously, with the Outlaws history there. They added a bunch of Outlaws guys. Yep. You got Kyle Pless in the waiver wire, who we'll get to. They drafted Michael Rexrode. They drafted Andrew Newbold. So those are already three defenders that Coach Clawson already has a history with. It goes back to the kind of the chemistry aspect of things. It's not always important from coach to player, but, you see a lot of teams, actually lean that way. But I'm interested to see what they're doing. I'm not sure yet. Like, I still want to see with the draft. I like having players that have played pro lacrosse already, because we project, these college drafts and where teams could land. Like, they have six picks, including two in the first round. They're going to be able to add some of the top talent from college, but it's still always a gamble with college lacrosse players, because you don't know how committed they are this summer. We can project who would be a perfect fit. I mean, I think it's safe to say that Michael Sowers is going to play pro lacrosse this summer, but you still don't know. It's a bit of a gamble with some of these draft picks, and that's why you see another coach kind of flip the other side, like Coach Quirk, and now he only has two draft picks, and he's added a lot of talent that's already played pro lacrosse. But we will get into that. We're going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then dive into the waiver wire.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. Isn't it bullshit to have to question where your food comes from? At Vital Farms, you can trace your pasture-raised eggs all the way back to the source, the pasture. On the side of each pasture-raised carton of eggs, you'll find the name of the farm where your eggs were laid. And when you look the farm up on their website, you'll get a peek at all the sunshine, fresh air, and open space the hens enjoy. Learn more and find out where to buy them at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
Today's episode is sponsored by Ducan Supply Co. Ducan is a men's body care brand that features an array of military-inspired products, from their signature big-ass bar of soap to their bourbon-infused beard oil. I personally use their Big Bourbon Beard Oil that is made with a hint of Buffalo Trace. I like the oak barrel scent that it gives off, and it makes me feel good about my beard, even if it's not as nice as the one that Adam's sporting these days. As an Army Reservist, I also love that they donate a portion of their proceeds to U.S. veterans. So go ahead and check out Ducanon, use our code LAX10 to receive 10% off your order, and find your own signature scent.
Welcome back to Pro Lacrosse Talk on the Lacrosse Playground Podcast Network.
All right, welcome back. Time to dive into our waiver wire. We'll start with the Atlas, just because we were talking about them a little bit. I mentioned already they added Kyle Pless from the Outlaws. They also added Mark Cockerton, who I was really surprised the Cannons didn't add, but not surprised. If the Cannons didn't use their first pick on Mark Cockerton, he wasn't going to be around by the time they had waiver priority again. So not too surprised that he ended up somewhere else, just surprised the Cannons didn't use their first pick on him. But I like him going to the Atlas because he has history with Rubior. You know, that was his offensive coordinator for 2 years when he was on the Cannons. And they also added a backup goaltender in J.D. Calrusso, Albany guy. He was actually, I think, the e-bug for the PLL Championship Series along with Alex Reddy. So, you know, he was already kind of in the player pool waiting for his chance, and he gets his opportunity to back up Jack and Cannon. So any thoughts on the Atlas waiver wire? Nothing too surprising here, but do you like their picks?
Yeah, you know, we were talking before the entry draft and before the waiver wire opened up about, you know, what is Coach Rubier doing with this? The term rebuild, right, kept coming up. And this feels like more of a retool for me, right? I know I mentioned previously that I think you can rebuild and win at the same time because of the dearth of talent in this league, and bringing in a guy like Mark Cockerton shows Coach Rubier wants to win this year. It's not just building for the future. It's building for now and the future. So I really like the Mark Cockerton pickup. I had mocked a guy like Andrew Q to the Atlas to fill a fairly similar role. So yeah, I really like that pickup. JD, really good goalie out of Albany, like you said. So he's building this team in his image and how he wants to see it. So these moves make complete sense thus far.
Yeah, no, and I kind of look at, too, some of these waiver wire ads as who added talent that I could have seen going getting drafted. And they added two guys here in Cockerton and Pless. You know, I didn't have him on my mock, but I toyed with it a little bit. So, you know, I think it was another big move for them taking Pless here as well. And I think, you know, they're continuing to rebuild and retool, like you said, but they're going to be able to compete day one. There's only eight teams, you know, and I don't know, we don't know how many teams are going to make the playoffs, but you know, odds are it's at least four, at least half the teams, if not maybe even six. So you're going to have opportunities to make a playoff run. Even if you are completely retooling and have a lot of young talent on your team.
Yeah. And we saw, you know, worries about kind of having a whole new team like last year with the expansion Water Dogs coming in. They didn't have a chance to really gel, right? They went right into the season, that shortened condensed bubble. With a team like the Atlas, who had a lot of new faces, they'll have that training camp to start to mesh and build that cohesiveness. So,
yeah, and by drafting people that have played on the same team, like Dan Beccaro, Kyle Pless, Michael Rexrode, Andrew Newbold, like you're already kind of, you know, creating that chemistry without even stepping foot on the field too. So yeah, I thought the Atlas moves were pretty in line with what I thought they would do. Let's move on to the Archers. They made some pretty surprising moves more on my side, but I loved pretty much every single one of them. They picked up LSM Latrell Harris, obviously plays in Toronto Rock. And he was another guy that we didn't maybe think would get drafted, but should definitely have been on some people's radar. They pick up Nate Solomon, who had a great year or a great bubble tournament last year with the Bayhawks. And then Nick Wachuta, my favorite pick, I think, by them. They got their goalie of the future, I think. He looked great last year on the Outlaws. Big lefty, has, again, history with Coach Cav with the Vermont. And, you know, I don't know what this means for Adam Gittleman or Drew Adams, because I don't see them, you know, keeping three guys on their roster. Obviously, you can have reserves in the PLL, so maybe, you know, they take Wachuta to camp. And if he doesn't, if they still want to go with their two goalie system with those two guys, they can, you know, leave him on their protected roster or whatever. But I think he's going to crack a lineup. I think it's really going to come down to who do you keep as a veteran goaltender, Drew Adams or Adam Gittleman? Wachuta's already proven that he can play in a two goalie system. I think it would be a disservice to him if you want him to be your future goaltender to not have him on a game day roster. But what are your thoughts on the Archers pickups? I don't want to pigeonhole you and just talking about the goalie, but I'm sure you have some thoughts on Wachuta.
Oh, yeah. I was really excited to see the Wachuta pickup. He obviously, like you said, played well for the Outlaws in that really condensed bubble last year in the MLL. And he has the pedigree to be a really good goalie in this league. Excited to see. I honestly, I'll differ from you. I think they're sticking with the Gittleman Adams duo until further notice. So they're very close, I think, the Archers to winning a championship. And I think it's not broken, why fix it? So I think they're going to stick with that build with Nick on that practice squad and go from there. So I don't see a better tandem of goalies to learn from at the pro level than the duo of Gittleman and Adams. So good pickup. Don't see him necessarily on an opening day roster unless there's an injury for that Archers team. And really excited to see Latrell Harris get a chance in the PLL too. Excited to see him ball out for this Archers squad in training camp to see if he can nab a roster spot.
Yeah, and they added three, you know, stud poles in him, obviously Graham Hossick and Warren Jeffrey, all Canadian too.
Move over Andy Towers.
we got to give Archers a little bit of love for, you know, picking up some Canadians here too. And as a result, they dropped Davey Emela, attackman, to the player pool, as well as LSM Mike Simon. I think Simon could still have a little bit of juice left in the tank. He posted on Twitter that he's still interested in playing and, you know, wants a chance. So I was, you know, not surprised that the Archers dropped him because, again, they keep adding, you know, upgrades at the pole position. But Mike Simon's no slouch. You know, he did well for them when they traded for him in year one and then obviously last year in the bubble. So, you know, he might find his way on a roster too. And that's the other interesting thing. Like, you know, him and Kyle Hartzell, we're talking about all these MLL players coming over. Him and Kyle Hartzell, I think, can still play. Like, I don't think Hartzell had a great, like, season last year, and I don't know if I would, you know, take a chance on him. But they're not bad poles, guys. Like, Kyle Hartzell got lit up on social media a bit by Grant Amon, but, you know, he's not a bad LSM. You know, I don't know. I don't think he'll get picked up. I think you'll just see him float in the player pool, Hartzell in particular. But it's just, you know, that's, again, a testament to the talent, because I don't think I think if there is a ninth team, those guys could easily make that ninth team. But, you know, when it comes down to it, like, there's only eight teams and you need the right eight guys, or you need the right guys for those eight teams. Yep. And I don't know if, you know, that those two guys are going to fit in to any of these teams, just given the dearth of LSM talent. And we haven't even gotten to one of my snubs in CJ Costabile, who we'll talk about a little bit later. All right, moving on to the Cannons. They made the most roster moves here. They added 9 players, technically 10, by trading for Andrew Q. And we'll get to that a little bit later, but this is some Boston heavy influence here. They added 4 former Boston Cannons, including MVP Bryce Wasserman. They added Chase Levesque, who played with Reese Eddy at Boston U. And then they added 2-time NFL champion Chris Hogan, who played for the New England Patriots. So, yeah, you can say it's Cannons Lacrosse Club. In my mind, it's still the Boston Cannons Lacrosse Club. Yeah. Because, again, this is going to be a Boston-heavy team based on these influences. Coach Cork obviously being a New England guy himself and coaching the Boston Cannons. But what are your thoughts on all these moves they made? They're now have a roster size of 30 and only 2 draft picks. We'll get to a little bit how they lost one with the Andrew Q trade. But again, it goes back to Coach Cork values pro ready players now. And that's how he's shaping this team. But what were your thoughts, and what was one of your favorite roster pickups by him?
Coach Quirk wants to go back to back. He wants to win that MLL championship and win in year one, and year one for him in the PLL. What a story that would be, right? In terms of players, I you know my love for Shane Jackson. He is such a stud. I was really surprised he didn't get drafted, reigning NLL MVP, and really excited to see him pair up with his Georgia Swarm teammate Lyle Thompson. Really, really excited to see that happen on this Cannon squad. And another guy that, you know, really we didn't talk about enough and doesn't get talked about enough is Holden Garland. Really excited to see what he can do. You know, really great pole for the BayHawks last few years, and really excited to see him suit up for the Cannons to see how he can do this year.
Yeah, and, you know, we talk about how they added some Boston Cannons guys. It's a pretty BayHawks-heavy team as well, with Chase Levesque, Holden Garland, and Luke Anderson. But, you know, the Cannons they did add were Scott Hooper, defense, Justin Pugel, who we both were not surprised at all that he was going to end up on a Cannons roster, you know, at the end of the day. John Upgren, who had a great championship, 5 goals in the championship last year to win that for them. And Bryce Wasserman, you know, and I think Cannons – was probably the best fit for him. You know, it'll be interesting how they utilize both him and Lyle, since they're both ball dominant guys. But you added a finisher in Shane Jackson, who's going to have the ball in his stick for very little time, but it's going to find the back of the net. So I was really excited about that one as well. And that was, I think, the only waiver wire hit that we had was yours, you know, mocking Shane Jackson to the Cannons in this waiver wire. The rest we were a little off on. Again, I was willing to put money on Cockerton going back to the Cannons, but I think they wanted him back. And I think what happened is they probably chose to use their first pick on Bryce Wasserman. And, you know, he just wasn't available when they came around. And that's what forced them to trade for Andrew Q. So we'll get to that a little bit. But
yeah, I was going to say, you wanted to bet the house on Mark Hockerton being the catch. You just bought your house, so I'm glad
I didn't do that. Yeah, you know, I would be homeless at this point. But I do want to talk about Chris Hogan a little bit too, because I had, you know, shot out a tweet that, you know, after the Cannons moved Brent Adams, they could still use some midfielders, and Chris Hogan was one that I thought would be a good fit. Now, that's not to say that you can replace Brent Adams with Chris Hogan. I think I've already mentioned how I thought it was foolish for them to trade away Brent Adams. I would have liked to have seen Brent Adams on this Cannons roster and then adding Chris Hogan as well. But I think we are still stuck in this mindset that the Chris Hogan move is solely a PR move. It is not. He's going to be one of the best athletes on the field, without a doubt, having played in the NFL. I don't care what his age is. Like, he's not that old, guys. He's like 31 years old. And, you know, some of the later guys we're going to talk about too are kind of in their early 30s. And, you know, we say that's old compared to, you know, the younger talent, and, you know, but pretty much for us, plus 30 is old, but that's not really the case either. Like, these guys can still play. But in the Chris Hogan situation, I don't understand why everyone thinks this is just solely a move to get some attention. Like, sure, it's going to bring a lot of attention. That's definitely a positive to it. But this guy wants to play in the PLL. Like, it doesn't matter that he's a big name coming over from the NFL. Like, that certainly helps. But every time I put out something about Chris Hogan, I'm doing it because I think he is actually going to be able to play well in this league. He was a great player at Penn State. Sure, he hasn't played in 10 years, but the skills you learn in football are pretty transferable. Let's not pretend like he is some bum off the street that's going to somehow, you know, just steal a roster spot from somebody. There's 240 roster spots, and I can tell you Chris Hogan would not be my 240th player that I'm taking to camp. Do I think he's going to make an impact in this league? Yes. Is it going to be a huge impact? I don't know. But to say that he is stealing a roster spot from somebody else is very disingenuous to me. And I, you know, that's just how I feel about it. I, you know, and you can argue with that. That's fine. We'll see how it shakes out on the field. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, he doesn't have what it takes to play in the PLL. But I think the upside is there. With a lot of these guys, you know what you're getting. You know what you're getting with a lot of these players that you're signing. With Chris Hogan, you don't necessarily know what you're getting, and maybe that's why coaches are shying away from him, but maybe that's also why Coach Quirk decided to pick him up, because he doesn't know, but he thinks the upside is good enough to use a spot on him. And I think that's a very valid reason to pick up a guy like Chris Hogan. It's not a PR move, but I want to move on from that and talk about this Redwoods trade that we alluded to.
I think it's one of the most brilliant moves of this offseason, and Nat St. Laurent has cemented himself as the PLL trade master supreme in my mind. I can think we can assume he picked up Andrew Q. Again, we don't know what the waiver order was like when these guys were picked up, but I would assume he picked up Q first and then Phipps. Maybe it was the opposite. But all I know is he picked up Q and flipped him for another pick in this draft by trading him to the Cannons. So, you know, Shane Jackson's a lefty finisher. I think Coach Quirk really, really wanted a shooter. And I think he probably had in mind, let me get my guy Cockerton back. And if I can't do that, pick up Andrew Q. Again, no slouch there. You can argue that, you know, one of those is a better shooter than the other. I would probably go Q as the purest shooter, probably better than Cockerton. Cockerton knew a little bit more, but, you know, Q is probably the better shooter. And he wanted one of those guys, I'm assuming, and had to make a trade to get him. And again, this goes back to Coach Quirk's like, sure, you can have a trade. Like, I don't need college talent right now. I need pro talent. So Coach Nat St. Laurent flipped Andrew Q for a pick in this draft, a third round pick. Brilliant move by him. Yeah. Brilliant. But that to me, like, what were your reactions when you saw one? I was surprised. I was like, well, Andrew Q, we haven't heard his name. Like, I'm surprised he didn't get picked up in the waiver wire. And then it turns out he was probably one of the top guys picked and got flipped. So what are your thoughts on Coach Nat's move?
As someone who literally has been waiting for years for these types of moves to move to professional lacrosse, as a guy that loves mocking trades and doing all those types of things, this is like a dream move for me. This is one of my favorite moves in PLL history, as ridiculous as that sounds, just for the purpose of asset management and all that kind of stuff. I'm really excited to see a guy like Hugh play on this Cannons attack. You know, like, Lyle is ridiculous. Shane Jackson, they have that chemistry. Bringing in a shooter off ball that can just rip it like Andrew Q. I'm really, really excited to see him on this Cannons squad. You mentioned Bayhawk heavy. Hey, another guy from that Bayhawk squad, mm-hmm. game winner in the 2019 championship for the Bayhawks. So really excited to see Andrew Q suit up for the Cannons. And, you know, like we haven't even mentioned, I know we're talking waiver wire right now, but they added Ryan Drenner and Clark Peterson, right? We're thinking just entry draft for this attack unit for the Cannons, and we haven't even mentioned the guys they already had on their roster. So brilliant move by Coach St. Laurent. If you couldn't see him making that, making your roster on game day for whatever reason, why not pick him up and leverage it? It's like exactly what I was talking about with the what I thought Coach Quirk should do with a guy like Adam Gittleman, right? That's mm-hmm. what I wanted to see happen in the expansion draft. Those draft and trades, really excited. Good yeah. work, Coach St. Laurent.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy too. Like the Cannons, what they did with, you know, they just have so many attackmen, like,
yeah.
you know, like John Upgren, you know, how do you fit him in when you have Lyle Thompson, Ryan Drenner, Shane Jackson, Bryce Wasserman, Andrew Q, like that's their attack right now. They have so many guys. They're going to need to like, you know, run some of these guys out of the box. So I'll be interested to see what happens there. But yeah, again, a brilliant move by Coach Nat St. Laurent. And let's, you know, give him some love too for picking up Brian Phipps, a very, very capable backup to back up Tim Trautner, another Anne Arundel guy as well. And, you know, let's say Trautner falters in any way or has an injury, like I would feel completely comfortable having Phipps in cage. I don't think they'd miss a beat at all. So good pick up by him. Phipps to the Whips didn't happen. Whips still need a backup goalie, but you know, I do like seeing our guy Brian Phipps get a chance to you know, play in this league, even if it is in a backup role. And I think he's the perfect backup for the Redwoods. Now moving on to the Chrome, they added more of the familiarity side of things when going on this waiver wire. They added only two guys. They had short stick defensive midi Ryan Bevel, who has history, you know, having played for Coach Galloway, John Galloway at Jacksonville. And then Greg Weil of the Connecticut Hammerheads, who's played in this league for quite some time with the launch a little bit. So he's another defender for them. You know, I don't know if he's a guy that I'm putting on my starting three, but he's capable of playing. So they added some depth here. Essentially, we thought they might take Matt Abbott at short stick defensive midi. Maybe he wasn't available by the time it rolled around. I don't know. But what were your thoughts on what the Chrome did? Again, you know, more of a chemistry focus as opposed to adding pure talent.
Yeah, you saw a guy like Ryan Bevel suit up for that Dallas Rattlers team in 2019, played 15 games for them. So another rat on the squad. You know, we mentioned that with the Randy Stats edition in the entry draft. Another guy, I think, Coach Sudan is all about the team chemistry, right? We've yeah. talked about that numerous times with him and about this Chrome squad after last year. So makes sense. You know, it's those quiet moves that win championships sometimes. And these could be part of that, bringing in guys that have strong chemistry with the team you're already building around.
Yeah. And the Chrome are pretty set, you know, at every facet of their roster essentially. So, and you know, they have four picks in this draft as well. So, you know, they can add some top tier talent that in the college draft and kind of just fill, you know, in some depth holes here yep. in the waiver wire. All right, moving on from the Chrome to the Water Dogs. They only added one player, Matt Witcher, who played for the Barrage, a D3 guy. So we love to see D3 guys who played at York. I was surprised they didn't make more moves though. You know, good to have a midfielder of his capability. You know, he's short stick defensive midi essentially. Can kind of go both ways, but you're going to see him more as a defensive midi role. They're currently in the roster sizes at 27.
Yep.
They have three draft picks. So again, as we mentioned, like these teams are looking ahead to see like projecting that they want to have 30 by the time going to camp. They don't necessarily want to cut anybody, but we'll get to that a little bit later. But what were your thoughts on Water Dogs picking up Matt Witcher?
Excited to see another D3 guy, obviously, added to a roster. Always excited to see that happen. And it makes sense. He went from the Barrage, the Philly Barrage, to the Water Dogs, right? So that a seamless transition there.
Yeah, and he's a pretty big guy too. So, you know, he's going to be a physical presence out there, you know, along with Stephen DiNapoli, who's another short, sick defensive mini they have. And then Kyle McClancy's probably, you know, the more scrappy, speedier guy that can push in transition. So they're pretty much set, I think, now at short, sick defensive mini. You know, I still would like them to add another attackman, but they must have their eyes on somebody in this draft. And the reason why they haven't, because I still think they could add another guy, along with, you know, Kieran McCardle and Ryan Brown, to this offense. So we'll see. But they didn't make much moves, but yeah, that's pretty much all we have to say about the Water Dogs. Not much there. Again, another depth add. Whip Snakes though. Again, they're playing chess while everyone's playing checkers here. They got Matt Abbott, short, sick defensive mini. You know, how he fell to them at whatever waiver position they were, I don't know. You know, they got Charlie Hayes in the entry draft. Now they have Matt Abbott, who is a ground ball machine. You know, one of the best to do it out of Syracuse and in the MLL with the Chesapeake Bay Hawks. Also added some face-off depth in Kevin Reisman. Surprised that they took him, but, you know, very capable backup behind Joe Nardella. I think you're still going to see Joe Nardella take the predominant amount of face-offs. I think that's a fact, but you know, Kevin Reisman's no slouch either. It'll be nice to have him kind of give relief to Nardella if he gets you know, needs some relief, or if he gets a penalty or anything too, and has to step in. So, you know, good there. We thought they were going to add an LSM. I thought they were going to maybe take CJ Costabile. They went a little bit younger and Alex Spring with the New York Lizards. Another solid pickup. I'd argue he was one of the top LSMs the past 2 years in the MLL. So I think that was a good pickup by them as well. But yeah, you know, they have the luxury of kind of plugging in these holes with needs. They have 4 picks in this draft, but their current roster size is still only 23. So they could make some more moves, you know, as it progresses. Again, this was just the initial waiver wire period. So they could still make some moves ahead of this season and the training camp. You know, they're going to have opportunities. The waiver wire was really big this week because it was opening up again, but there's 2 days each week until the end in April 30th after the college draft that teams can make moves. So you could still see some waiver claims made going forward. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I don't think many teams do until after the college draft, but they still have that opportunity to do so if they see fit. Maybe they're still trying to work out, you know, with their coaches, what other guys they want to add. But again, another good pickups by the Whip Snakes in this waiver wire period.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just crazy to think that they had a couple holes to fill and they filled those holes immediately with a guy like Charlie Hayes, with a ridiculously talented guy, stud veteran in Matt Abbott, in the waiver wire. You would not expect, because of where they were in the draft and the waiver wire positioning, would be able to get the players they got. Like I mentioned how many times Brian Cole to the Whips in the entry draft is just ridiculous. Charlie Hayes was a good pickup, obviously. And then Matt Abbott, just a winner, right? When you think of Matt Abbott, you think winner, and he's going to the winningest team in PLL history, right? So the rich get richer. Their moves are just absolutely solid, filling holes that maybe not even needed to be filled, right, in some areas. So they're just stacked, and they're obviously my pick if I had to take a projected champion for next year.
Yeah, no, I don't know if I'd go that far because the moves the Archers have made, but the Whips are defending champs for a reason, and they're still the team to beat. So I, you know, I agree with you in that regard. You know, maybe my Archers biases are coming out a little bit in saying that, but let's talk a little bit about the Chaos, who didn't make any waiver wire moves at all. They didn't add any. They have a roster size of 25 and 6 picks in this college draft. So again, they're already going to have to like make a cut prior to training camp anyway, but I was surprised they didn't pick anybody up. I know they signed Chase Fraser and Dalton Crossan off of waivers prior to even the entry draft. You know, Johnny Sirdic and Matt Reese are on their roster right now. They might not be available some weeks during this season because of their military commitments. So maybe some of these guys come up, but I was shocked they didn't add a guy because we're going to get to, you know, five or six players that kind of were our snubs. And, you know, they could have had really any one of those guys. Were you surprised they didn't make any moves, though?
Yeah, not really, just for the plain fact that, you know, we've talked about this team building aspect, and that is such a big part of what Coach Towers talks about, is building a roster that really meshes well together. And they brought 3 guys in the entry draft that did just that in Jalen Rodgers. Now you have Max Adler at the faceoff X and a guy like Kyle Jackson at the midfield who's a solid, can be a solid role player for them. So Coach Towers knows what he's doing, right? Obviously, if you can bring in a really strong guy, there's, we'll talk about in a couple seconds about some of those snubs. But if you're going to end up cutting those guys anyway, because you know you're keeping a specific few players, it makes sense that they're not making maybe those ads right now because there are some studs still available.
Yeah, I get that. I still think, though, you make some moves and kind of figure it out later. I get these coaches don't want to ruin relationships with players and, you know, add them and then have to cut them prior to training camp before they even get a shot. But, you know, let's get into our snubs. There are some guys out there that should be on a roster and should be at training camp. And if they aren't, I'm going to be shocked. And again, you know, they have till April 30th to find a place on a roster. But, you know, some of these guys, you know, that I'll just list right now that we are going to talk about, you got Dylan Molloy, Tommy Palasek, Garrett Thule, Mark Matthews, CJ Costabile, and Nick Manis. Now, you know, those are like the six guys that we're saying. And again, Nick Manis, you know, is a guy that you think could really excel in this league. I do too. I wouldn't put him maybe in the top tier of those five other guys.
I just made
four or five other guys.
I made Hutton add him to the list because I think he's that good and I think he's that versatile.
Yeah, I agree too. But, you know, there's like, if he didn't show up to training camp at the PLL, I would be okay with that.
Sure.
If Dylan Molloy is not at training camp for the PLL, something's wrong, you know? And that's why I'm like, why not, if you're Coach Towers, why not just add Dylan Molloy to your roster and figure it out later? You know, again, he's got chemistry with this attack already, but Dylan Molloy would be the best attackman, maybe other than Josh Byrne, on that roster. You could say that about a lot of these rosters. And again, I know you don't want to shake things up, but like, if you have a chance to get Dylan Molloy, why not give him a chance to like make your squad? I don't know. And I know people are throwing out, well, the league's blackballing him because he joined the PLL, left to go to the MLL, and then now he's coming back. But that narrative doesn't fit for me because he signed with the league.
Yep.
If that was the case, he would have never been signed to the league and be available in the player pool to be drafted or picked up. You know, again, I don't know the situation with Dylan Molloy. I haven't talked to Dylan Molloy like I have with Tommy Palasek and CJ Costabile, who we'll get to. But, you know, Dylan Molloy, young stud attackman, should be on a roster and should be competing for a spot at training camp.
Yeah, if you've won the Tuareton in the last 10 years, you probably should be on a roster, right?
Yes, if you have won the Tuareton and you're interested in playing, you should be on a roster. There's no other ways to slice it. Like, that's a fact.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you in that sense, but I just, when I look at roster building, if you bring in a guy like Dylan Molloy and you're set, say you have like five or six attackmen on your squad, right? You're not cutting any of them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do in that situation when Dylan Molloy outplays three or four of them in training camp and then you still make that move? So where's the value added with making that move if you already know who those 25 guys on your roster? Maybe I completely understand where you're coming from in a sense that he obviously is a top talent, but I just go back to that roster building and team side.
Yeah, no, the camaraderie and the chemistry, you want to create that. You know, so maybe chaos isn't the best example, but like, I mean, water dogs, like, you know, you could run them from X and then you have him, Ryan Brown, and Kieran McArdle. Yeah, you know, you just can't tell me that Dylan Molloy, there's not enough room on a team for Dylan Molloy, you know. And going off of that, you know, he's the younger one of this bunch. You know, there's some veterans that were left out, like Tommy Palasek is one, you know, 31 years old, I believe. But the dude was second in points, tied with Rob Pinnell, only behind Lyle in 2019. He was the third leading scorer on the 2015 New York Lizards championship team behind only Paul Rabil and Rob Pinnell. And he's still playing at a high level. Like, Tommy Palasek can ball. Like, get him on a roster. You know, I don't understand why. Like, I can understand and overlook him not getting picked in the draft. I can understand that. Like, there's a lot of talent. But now the waiver wire, like, you're making some of these ads, like, just add him to your roster and then figure it out later. You know, coaches don't want to add players to the roster and cut them before training camp. I get that. But really, any team
still should have probably picked up Palisic, save maybe the Archers or Redwoods who are just loaded on offense already. But it just doesn't make sense to me. And then Costabile too, like some other LSMs were picked up, you know, and I get age is always a thing, but CJ Costabile was the LSM of the year last year for the MLL. And he really hasn't, if you watch film, he hasn't missed a step. Like, why is he not on a roster? And I talked to Tommy Palisic and CJ Costabile, and you know, they haven't heard anything. Like, you know, this isn't like, hey, we're maybe interested, we're just not sure yet. Like, they haven't heard anything from any of these coaches. So I don't know. I don't want to put coaches on blast. They have a reason, like they have their job for a reason, and you know, they have to construct a roster. And you know, again, it goes back to, you're not creating an all-star team here, you're creating a team that has chemistry. But you know, if those guys aren't going to camp this summer, I just don't know what's going on. Like, I don't have an answer for you. So two other guys, I know, you know, Nick Manis is one we mentioned, but two other guys, Garrett Thule, Mark Matthews, a little bit of a different situation than the three I just mentioned and have ranted about. I still think, again, they deserve a camp spot too. Mark Matthews really hasn't had that much field success. He is a stud in the NLL. He also is a guy I deserves to be on a roster. You know, if he doesn't go to camp too, I'm just as shocked as probably the other three. But, you know, if you're looking purely at field success, it hasn't really been there. Again, that's not a reason not to take him, because you know his skill set and he's one of the best passers in the game of lacrosse. That is an asset whether you're playing box or field. So I still think he should find his way on a roster. Again, maybe, you know, Chaos seems like a perfect example, and you know, maybe April 30th rolls around and he's on the Chaos roster, and you know, I can stop talking about this, but he was another one that I was shocked didn't get a look. And Garrett Thule, like, he's not that far removed from playing professional lacrosse. He was a captain on Team USA. He's in great shape. Like, fitness can't be an issue because he's been in the military. So I don't understand why a team didn't take a shot on him. And I know this league is very offensive heavy, but if a team like the Cannons is comfortable, you know, having what, 7 or 8 attackmen that all could, you could probably, other than Lyle, like plug in and play like in a bunch of different ways and have a starting attack line, you know, I feel like other teams should at least add one of these guys to the roster and let them compete for a camp spot. At least going into, like, I don't understand. This kind of goes back to, you know, I get if you have 6 draft spots or if you have a lot of draft spots and you want to meet that 30 mark after the college draft, yeah, that makes sense. But what if those college draft picks are just like, yeah, I'm not playing this summer? Well, then what do you do? Then you go to the waiver wire. Well, guess what? The guys that you could have picked up right now, they're gone because someone else picked them up. So that's what I don't understand. Like, if you're holding out for a college prospect, unless you know for a fact and you've talked to them that they're playing, like, why not pick up a few other guys and then figure it out later? You know, this is professional lacrosse. It's a business. It's not, you know, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Like, yeah, it, you know, feelings are hurt because they haven't been picked up, but like, pick up a guy and say, listen, I'm picking you up. I'm waiting to see what happens in the college draft, and I'll release you to waivers if that's, you know, if I get somebody that I want in the college draft. I think players personally would be more appreciative of that. And then at least they'd still have another chance to get picked up in waivers after that. But like, if I'm a coach, I'm stockpiling these guys, like all those 5, 6 guys we named, like, add them to your roster, figure it out later. I don't know. That's the mindset I take because, you know, it's a business. So I don't really put feelings into it. I want to stockpile the most talent. And then, you know, if I get college picks that are more talented or that I want on my roster more, then, you know, you can have that discussion with the guys already on your roster. But to me, it doesn't make sense to kind of wait and see because you're letting 7 other teams get a crack at those guys as well.
No, that makes complete sense. I do think because of the size of the league, there is more of that. While it's a business, I think there's more of that. We're yin and yang, right? You're taking the emotion out of it more. I think those types of conversations are probably happening. And I think there's more of the kind of people side of things going on than we expect. And that's one thing I'm really excited as this league grows and develops to see kind of what those conversations look like, right? Maybe at training camp, hopefully we'll be able to see some footage of these types of conversations, like a Hard Knocks or whatever the case may be. I take those players that you mentioned, right? Obviously. But it really is dependent on the situation.
I get like too what you're saying too with like, you know, the relationships and stuff like that, but it's, you know, and you know, maybe all of this is for naught because these guys end up getting picked up by a team before training camp. But I just think, I don't understand why you just don't, like, I don't understand. Like, I love what the Redwoods did. They clearly only needed one more player, but they picked and flipped them. And you can't do that with every player. You know, obviously I think it worked out well for them, but there's not going to be too many teams that are willing to trade a pick for a player like Coach Cork did.
Yeah.
But like, at least add them to your roster and figure it out later. Like, you know, stockpile this talent. Like, you know, a team could essentially have all five or six of those guys. And sure, then they have to make decisions. And I don't think it would make sense to take all, you know, five or six of those guys, but at least take two of them and then, you know, have a little flexibility going into it. And again, those guys I'm mentioning, I'm more shocked because they would be starting in this league over a lot of other players that are already on a roster, you know, and I don't like, I'm not going to name names because, you know, I don't like to put other players down to build other players up. I don't think it's, I think it's disingenuous to do that, but yeah, I'm kind of shocked that these guys didn't get picked up, and I'll continue to be shocked until after the college draft and we find out what happens. But anyway, that wraps up another episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk. Appreciate you guys listening. Let us know if there were any other snubs that we didn't talk about. Let us know, you know, some other team ads that you would like to see, but we appreciate you guys tuning in. Feel free to tweet at us. If you like this episode, leave us a 5-star review and make sure you tune in next time to Pro Lacrosse Talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode is sponsored by Ducan Supply Co. Ducan is a men's body care brand that features an array of military-inspired products, from their signature big-ass bar of soap to their bourbon-infused beard oil. I personally use their Big Bourbon Beard Oil that's made with a hint of Buffalo Trace. I like the oak barrel scent that it gives off, and it makes me feel good about my beard, even if it's not as nice as the one that Adam's sporting these days. As an Army reservist, I also love that they donate a portion of their proceeds to U.S. veterans. So go ahead and check out Ducanon, use our code LAX10 to receive 10% off your order, and find your own signature scent.